or to the cloud. Okay. Okay. So we were talking last time about, we went Minyan L'Inyan, Oto Inyan, but more Minyan L'Inyan. We moved a little bit off of pandemic ethics to move to some end of life ethics. And I'd like to talk about some of that today, just to finish it, because I think it's important. Clearly not in a necessarily comprehensive way. And then we'll get that back to some pandemic stuff in terms of more public health related. And then possibly, I think we end the week of Tisha B'Av, maybe about fasting on Tisha B'Av in light of epidemics and such. Okay. So what we started talking about last time, we talked about end of life care. We talked about, we were trying to talk about, you know, taking the ventilator from one person to give to another person. And so we got into, well, what, leave pandemics aside. It's hard to do in today's day and age, but shanim ketikunam. So what's the deal with removing a ventilator? So pointed out, so how does all of this work? Why would anyone even have a havamina? Where would we get this idea that something like this could even be something we can think about? And the real, there is some rishonim that talk about it, but mostly it comes from a line in Shulchan Aruch, which I'm going to share with you in a moment. Share screen. Okay. So this is from Shulchan Aruch Yodei Shin Lamed Tes. Shin Lamed Tes is the beginning of Hilchas Avelus, if you will, or maybe before Hilchas Avelus, or something like that. Dinei HaGosei. So Gosei, we pointed out, is someone who is dying. We pointed out in Halacha that you could be alive or dead, which is somewhat obvious, but someone who's dying is alive. And that's the first line, Shulchan Aruch here, Shin Lamed Tes. HaGosei HaReu Kechai Lechol Devarav. A Gosei is alive. He's alive. Meaning, in Halacha, we treat people, you're on one, so there is no line. One piece in the Brisker Rav about this, but there's no line. There's no line. You're on one side of the line, you're the other side of the line, and therefore a gosei says kechai lechol devarav. Now the Mishnah on Alos, when it talks about what does that mean that he's kechai lechol devarav, it gives all sorts of fascinating nafkamina about truma and chalitza and yibum. Okay, all true, but practically not very relevant for most people. So the Shulchan Aruch gives some more practical things. And therefore what? Because we have more space. Okay. And therefore what? In koshrin lechayav, you don't tie his cheeks. Vein sachin oto, and you don't put oil on him. Vein medichin oto, and you don't wash him. Vein pokagin et nekavav, and you don't stop up any of the orifices. Vein shomtim hakar mitachtav, and you don't take the pillow out from under him. They note him al gabei chol, and you don't put him on the ground on dirt, v'lo al gabei charsis, or on some pieces of ceramic, v'lo al gabei adama, or on the ground. Now there are other things that they note him al kreisa lo ka'arav lo magreif lo tzolchis. You don't put shalmayim. You don't put anything on his stomach. Not a plate. Not a metal object. Nothing with water. V'lo gargir shalmelach, and not salt. Why would you even think to do any of these things? So those who may be parts of, who may have been involved in Chever Kadisha work will know these are, not all of these are not what we all do, but many of these things are how we prepare someone for burial. We close their mouth, we clean them. I guess they use oil back in the day instead of soap. Medichin, you clean, and pokagin in the kavav, and sometimes you have to put cotton in the nose or in other orifices, and you have to remove, when someone dies, b'sh'as misa mamish, so when they die on the spot, if I get preparing them for burial, we do try to make sure their hands are on the bed and we take out a pillow from under them. And then what we do is we put them on the ground. As soon as we're confident that they're dead, as soon as we have certainty that they've passed, we're a little bit machmir about this. We generally, if I'm not mistaken, Minhag Yisrael is to wait at least 20 minutes after death is declared, or we're confident that they're dead, just in case. We don't want to move someone and that movement might harm them. And so then we put them on the ground. And so the Shulchan Aruch is saying, a goseis, we don't do any of those things to. None of that is appropriate because they're still alive. So don't do anything to him or her that's preparing them for burial. Okay, somewhat obvious, but Shulchan Aruch is saying, good, don't do anything to the body, but it goes more than that. Vein mashmin alavayaros. And don't mashmin alavayaros, I guess, is, you know, sending out the email that this person had passed, because they haven't. Vein sochrin chalilam makoninos, and don't start hiring the people who play the chalil, the flutes, and the mekonenos, the women who are going to say kinos. They used to have some type of a musical accompaniment to a levaya. So don't start hiring them. right? Because this person is not dead yet. Which is effectively the Shulchan Aruch is telling you, don't do those things which we only do to dead people now, because this person is alive. Practically, this gets very, very complicated because sometimes we know a ghost ace is going to die, and some things require time. We know someone is passing away, and they need to get onto a flight in order to be buried in wherever they want to be buried, or it's appropriate for them to be buried. So when Shabbos is coming, and Yom Tov is coming, and so these are very, very practical shilas. Can they arrange for these things? Because, you know, in the heat of the moment, afterwards, it's often pressed for time, and these things are harder to come by, and then the prices can often change also. And not everything's about money, but sometimes the price changes significantly if you plan ahead a little bit. So these are very real issues, so the post can deal with these things. And so fine, sometimes in order to accomplish it, we know they're dying, and we need to make a proper arrangements for them so we can make proper some arrangements for them. Again, we don't do anything to their body, talking about arranging for a plot. I mean, there's a famous school of that, I don't remember who says, that if you arrange for funeral plot, for a burial plot, it's a school of Arichus Yomim. Okay? So people do this well when they're alive, when they're not ghosts. But okay, fine. So we don't do anything to the body, and we don't start planning for the Leviah per se, because they're alive. Good. So far, okay, somewhat intuitive, a little bit of a Musar Shmuz. Good. And this is where it gets practical for us. Ve'in me'amtsin einav, and you don't close his eyes. Like Gemara wants to know, is it me'amtsin with an ayin and an aleph? What does it mean? You don't close his eyes. Ad shetet seinashu, until he dies. Even if you're not, if you've never participated in Chever Kadisha, or even if you have, if you've never collected a body from where they pass away, the first thing we do is we close their eyes. You may know that, right? So we don't close their eyes, ad shetet seinashu, until they die. Because again, you're not preparing the body for death, for burial, until after they die. And if someone who does so is considered as if they murdered him. Why? The ghost says he's dying. So the Gemara in Shabbos says, I think we're getting there very soon in Daf Yomi, not yet, that that why? It's a mashal l'ner. The person's soul is compared to a fire. A person's compared to a candle, and there's a fire, and the fire is flickering and going out, and it'll go out in a minute, but if you put your finger on it, it goes out a little bit faster. So to here, the person's body is the candle and the fire is the neshama, and it's flickering away. And if you close the eyes, you may speed that up. You're not allowed to do that. Long tshuva is in Rav Moshe exactly what that means. Why should that be so? It's a safek, it's not a vadai. Are we really going to kill somebody who did this? It's hareza shofech damim. The person's a murderer, so we take that very seriously. So if someone is about to close their eyes, are they now considered to be a rodef? Is this yaharig val yavor? Probably not. Rav Moshe deals with what does that mean. This is probably a guzma, but it's a bad thing to do, so we don't do it. Vein korin, v'lacholtziv, l'maspidim alavin, you don't tear kriya, okay? V'lacholtziv, they used to do chalitzas katif. As a sign of avelos, they would like take their shirts or their jackets off their shoulders. As a sign of avelos, there's no avelos. They must speed them, though. You don't make a hesped, because they're alive. V'lamachnisin imo aron labayis, and you don't bring an aron into the house. Ad shi almost until he dies. Vein poskanov, v'tzidok adin, ad shetei tzei nafshu. You don't say tzidok adin either? Okay, till he dies. So all of these are, you don't have a velos until after he dies, I understand that. And that you don't say tzidduk adin until he dies, I understand that. And you don't close his eyes until after he dies, I understand that. What about the aron into the house? So again, this is one of those things. You'll bring it in after he dies, don't bring it in now. Now is not appropriate. Whether he'll be aware of it, and because he's aware of it, it's not going to be good for him psychologically, or whether it's inappropriate for us, the people who are alive, to say, hey, it's not right that while a person's dying, we're bringing in the coffin already to take him out. Maybe that's wrong for us. It's not proper respect. Fine. All of this makes a lot of sense. Fine. Either al pi din, or it's a gzeira, or it's a musar shmuz. I can defend and understand all of the details that are here. We can defend the Rama too, who's going to add in some things, but it's important to see some of these things also. So then the Rama adds on, Haga, v'yesh omrim, de'in chotz v'lo kever, afal pi she'in imo babayis adachar shiyamos. There are those who say you don't even dig the grave. The Shulchan Aruch said, don't bring the coffin into the house. Bring the aron into the house. So there are those who say, don't even dig the grave until after he dies. Again, you can easily make the argument that bringing the aron into the house is different than digging the grave. One is with the person in the home, and one requires some planning. It's going to take a long time, depending on what you have to dig and unions and all sorts of other fun things that we have to deal with. Fine. So some say that also. Good. not for us. You're not supposed to dig a grave today that they'll use tomorrow, and there's a sakana. Whether that's a physical sakana, because someone could slip and fall, or whether that's a spiritual sakana, not for now. It's from the Sefer Chassidim, so he's assuming it's a spiritual sakana, but it could also just be a physical sakana. You don't do that. But okay, fine. Whatever the reason, not for us. It's this fourth line over here that interests us. You're not allowed to do anything that will cause the person to die quickly. Now, the language here is difficult. You can't cause the mace to die quickly. Mason don't die, only living people die. So you have to assume that he's referring to the same person. So you're not allowed to do anything that causes someone to die more quickly. Which, okay, this is very similar to what it said in Shulchan Aruch, right? Just previously, don't close his eyes. You're not allowed to do anything that will cause this person to die more quickly. But the Ramah gives more examples, and this is where it gets complicated. Kegon, he gives an example. Mishu goseis zman aruch, someone who's a goseis for a long time. Velo yuchal lihi pared, and it's not possible to separate. Now he's quoting the Shulta Giborim here, and v'lo yuchal lihi pared, and he cannot separate. So they explain what's he talking about. The person is dying, okay, and it's taking a long time. V'lo yuchal lihi pared, and the soul is unable to leave. I mean, because we just said, right? If you look in Shulchan Aruch again, ve'ein me'amtzin einav ad she'teitzei nafsho. You're not allowed to close his eyes until he dies. I said. The language in Shulchan Aruch is ad she'teitzei nafsho, until his soul leaves. So here, the Ramah is using, or the Shulta Gemara is using a melitza, v'lo yuchal lihi pared. The soul is trying to leave, but it can't separate. It can't leave. Okay, so this person's dying. So the Ramah is saying, you can't do anything that's going to speed up that process. So therefore, you have this person who's goseis zman aruch v'lo yuchal lihi pared. So what are you not allowed to do? Aser lahashmit hakar v'hakesus mitachtav. You can't take out the pillow or the blanket from under him. Now, why would you think that that makes a difference? So he tells you, because some people say, you know why he's gosei zman aruch v'lo yuchal lihi pared? Because there are feathers from some birds that are causing this. That the pillow is stuffed with feathers, and the feathers are causing him to be a gosei zman aruch v'lo yuchal lihi pared. The feathers are causing him not to be able to die. Okay. And therefore, the Ramah is saying, don't remove the pillow. Because, why? He's saying, mikach sh'omim. Because you think that when you remove the pillow, you're removing the feathers, and therefore he'll die. So you're not allowed to do that. You can't remove the feathers if the feathers are sort of keeping him alive. Now, I don't know what feathers he's talking about. But it's highly irrelevant. Whenever we deal with a lot of these, it's important to say, whenever we deal with a lot of these medical topics or pseudo-medical topics or things that seem like a refuah, whether it's in Shulchan Aruch or whether it's in the Rishonim or whether it's in the Gemara, so it's easy for us to laugh and say, okay, that's the way we know better. And I'm sure in 50, 100 years from now, they're going to laugh at us a lot. We're laughing pretty much at what people said in March, and we're only in July, so it's only a few months. But these are still valuable to learn because the Ramah assumed it worked. Let's assume the Ramah thought it was true. Fine. We're not reading the Shulchan Aruch for a Sefer Refuah. We're reading it for a Sefer Halacha. So assume that that's true. And now what are you not allowed to do because of it? Whether it's true or not is irrelevant because the Ramah assumed it was. And therefore his Halacha is based on the fact that he assumed it was true. And therefore what you're allowed to do or not allowed to do is based on what we believe is going to be true. So we have to understand, assume the Ramah thought this was real. The Ramah thought this was real. Fine. And therefore, he's paskening a halacha based on what he knows to be real. And therefore, we can learn the halacha, even if we will disagree with the scientific premise. This happens a lot. This happens a lot because science advances. But the halacha advances in as much as it applies in different situations differently. But the principles are true. So the principle that the Ramah derived from here is still accurate today, even if we might disagree with the science. So he's saying, don't remove the pillow. Because you think that the feathers in the pillow are keeping him alive. Okay.
Well, what does Mikach She'omrim add over here? Is it because people say that?
Yeah, excellent question. People say that because we're going to see the Shachan Taz have issues. Now, leave it aside for a moment, because not leave it aside for a moment, but keep it in mind, because he's going to contrast, he's going to give you two or three things you cannot do, and then two or three things you can do, and we're going to have to try to figure out why they're different from each other. Because to us, they're going to seem very similar, or I think they're very similar, maybe you won't, but it's important, you're right. Why mikach she'omrim? Why does he use this language? Well, he's using this language because he's quoting Sotei Gevurah, who's using this language. Maybe because it wasn't clear. Maybe it's only some people say like that. I'm not sure. I don't know. But let's assume he's taking it as a fact for now, because it's going to be relevant when we compare it in the same sentence. The Rama gives you some things you can and some things you can't. So that's one thing you cannot do. You can't remove the pillow. So let's assume that that's a given, because the removing the pillow is going to cause him to die faster because we're removing the feathers. V'chein lo zizenu mimkomo. You can't move him. You can't move him. Lo yizizenu mimkomo. Now, why can't you move him? The Mefreshim explained, well, if you can't close his eyes because you're afraid that that light, slight movement is going to speed up his death, so then picking him up and moving him, kol shekein. Now, this is going to become relevant practically. What does that mean, lo yizizenu mimkomo? There are two issues, or several issues, where this is practically relevant. The first is, what does that mean, not to move him? Not to move the person, like pick him up, the whole person, and move him, or not to move any part of him? Nafkamina, can you hold his hand? Can you hold the person's hand while they're dying? Or Nishmas Avraham has the tragic cases of babies. Can the mother hold the baby? Can the mother hold this newborn who wasn't going to make it until the baby dies? Tragic. Shlomo Zalman has another case. What if it's a person in the emergency room who's dying, who's a gosase, and they're on a stretcher? So stretcher now means that if I move him, it's different than moving his body. I mean, he's going to stay relatively stationary compared to his own body, but moving according to him, and he's blocking the elevator. So can you move him to get someone else to get more care? Okay. But you're not allowed to move him because, again, the assumption is if closing the eyes can speed up death, so certainly moving the whole body can. Fine. This is also, since I became a rabbi, more relevant. Not practically so. You can't put the keys to the shul under his head, so he'll die faster. It's relevant because now I have keys to the shul. I remember the first time I got a key to the shul, to the big door. So then I'm like, okay, there's a Rama. I got to be careful what I do with my key. I find sometimes making light of these things is helpful because it's too much morbidity is too much for me. I understand it's a serious thing. But you can't put the keys to the shul by his head because you think the keys to the shul are going to kadeshi parade for the soul to depart. Makes you wonder what you think the shul's doing. But okay, fine. So he gave us three things we can't do. Can't remove the pillow. You can't move him. You can't put the keys to the shul by his head. Okay, fine. Other, I mean, if that's where the Rama would have left it, I would have said, okay, don't do anything that may, even in his reality, that may hasten the person's death. Okay. And whether it's a physical thing or a spiritual thing, or it's the feathers, or it's the, I'm assuming the feathers they, again, these are all assumptions. I'm assuming that the feathers they thought had some physical, something changing with the body. I don't think they ever thought that the keys can physically change the body. That's more ruchni. Certainly the keys to the Beis HaKnesses is more ruchni. And now the person can, you know, they're given permission to leave the Beis HaKnesses, so they have the keys that can leave. I don't know what the feathers, but okay, whatever it is, don't do anything that could end his life. Okay. But the Ramah continues. Aval, however, im yesh sham davar shegorim ikuv yitzias hanefesh. However, if there is something that is causing the soul to be unable to depart. It's me'akev. It's preventing the soul from departing. Okay, so that's going to be allowed. So, for example, kigon, she'esh samuch lo sobayis kol dofik. Near that house, there's a banging sound. Kigon chotev eitzim. There's someone chopping wood, rhythmically. And he's chopping wood, and he's chopping down trees, and there's a rhythmic beat. And that is preventing the soul from leaving. Okay, Oshiyesh melach al lashono, or there's salt on his tongue. The elu me'akvin yitzias nefesh, and these are preventing the neshama from leaving. Nefesh, it says. Mutter lahasiro misham. You're allowed to move them. Or move them. De'ein bazem meisa klal, ela shemesir hamoneya. This is not considered to be a ma'aseh. This is not considered to be an action, meaning you're not allowed to do something to make this person die sooner. But you're just mesir hamoneya, you're removing the impediment to death. So bigadol, before we delve into the details, which are going to be very challenging, you're not allowed to do something active that's going to end someone's life prematurely, but you're allowed to remove an impediment to death. Okay. How do I know, and if the keys to the shul are already there? Can I remove them? Do I not remove them? I'm allowed to remove an impediment to death, but I'm not allowed to remove the feathers? Maybe it was a pillow. We said the pillow, you're not allowed to remove. The feathers are causing this to happen. So remove the feathers and then he'll die. So that you're not allowed to do. But if there's salt on his tongue, you are allowed to. What's going on? How do you make sense of this? So the Rambam's very clear what the guiding principle is. He's telling you, if you just read the, I don't know if you can see my highlighter. You're not allowed to do something for the mace to die quicker. I understand that. That's fine. Good. Not that that's fine. That's terrible, but fine. You're not allowed to do it. But they're at the end. But when it's meisir hamoneya, when something gets me'akev itzias hanefesh, you're allowed to remove because you're removing an impediment. So he's distinguishing between doing a maisa and removing an impediment. But how in the world do I know what's considered to be a maisa and what's considered to be removing an impediment? Now, the examples he gives makes it only more challenging. Now, we know in halacha elsewhere, so this is an issue when it comes to hilchas ratzicha, for example, when it comes to many grumma switches and stuff are based on this exactly understanding. When you remove an impediment, I can't necessarily be, the action that results is not necessarily attributed to me. Okay, which I understand that. If I'm removing the impediment, so then the resultant is not my, cannot be blamed on me. I didn't actively do it, but rather it was happening and I just allowed it to continue. So what does that mean? Why is it, so the Shach and Taz say, well, okay. What's going on here is a little bit more complicated, but not so much so. They say, you know what you're not allowed to do? Don't touch him. You're not allowed to deal with the person, right? When you move the pillow from out from his head, you're going to lift his head up, you're going to pull the pillow out, and you're moving it back down, and that you're not allowed to do, right? That's the first example of things your muscles are not allowed to do. V'chein lo yizizenu mimkomo, and you can't move him, because now you're moving him. And you can't put the keys at his head. Why? Because that's an active thing. You're putting something there. So even if it's not touching him, you're not allowed to do either one. You can't do anything active, and you can't touch the body. But if you want to stop the woodchopper, you're allowed to stop the woodchopper. What does the woodchopper have to do with me? You're also allowed to remove the salt. So now the Shach and Taz have to tell you, why can't you remove the salt? They're removing the salt from the tongue. So that's, so they say, nah, that's not really moving. That's nianu akal. That's only a slight thing. That's okay. That's not considered a significant enough movement to make it aser. So that's how they deal with this. That there are some things that you can't move the body. And otherwise, if you're not moving the body, you're not doing something active, then it's acceptable. So you're stopping the woodchopper. You're stopping the woodchopper. Now, understanding the details between these things is going to be very challenging. Now, the Rambam's giving these strange examples. I don't know what medicine was like in the 1500s. I certainly don't know what it was like in the time of the Shulta Giborim, but these are strange examples. These are just like strange things. Now, maybe they weren't so strange back in the day, but many of them seem strange. Many of them seem different than what we would have thought. What about refuels? What about medicine? What about stopping to give him medicine? Can you stop to give him medicine? So he doesn't mention it, but in all likelihood, they're almost trying to think, like, what are you giving this person who's dying? He doesn't talk about medicine at all, which is kind of strange. But he's clearly saying that some things you're allowed to stop. And this is something that's picked up by many poskim, but the Stipler is always a good one to read. The Stipler in the Krainet Igrisa, he has this very interesting letter. And it's important to see it because people are unaware. So he says over here, this paragraph over here, Be'ikar ha'yesod. Be'ikar ha'yesod, the kol masha efshar lahari chaya achola, afilu eino lechaya isha tzrichim la'asos. Regarding this idea that anything that you can do to extend someone's life, afilu eino lechaya isha, even for chaya isha, even only for a little while, you must do, right? You must do everything at all the time to keep someone alive as long as possible. I remember as a child hearing this, or when I was younger, hearing something like this. And I didn't know if it was from a reliable source. It's what people say. Now, who are the people? Well, that makes a big difference. Who are the people who say this? Aval be'enai, in my eyes, now, when he's the discipler, davar ze tzarech iyun gadol. This is not so pashut at all. Why? To be ardei asim chin lamites, what we just saw in Shulchan Aruch, mevor de mudar lahasir davar hamoneh p'iras achola. You're allowed, it's clear that you're allowed to remove an impediment to death. He adds in brackets, k'shal yedei ze hamoneh yisur avrabim. Meaning if not, he's suffering. There he already adds in when yes and when no. It's only when the person's suffering, we'll get to that. But clearly you're allowed to remove it. V'rak ma'ase begufo asur la'asos. You're just not allowed to do something to his body. That's what we said the Shach and the Taz say. V'imkein liel sheva al taisa l'chora. So to be sheva al taisa, meaning if I don't do everything possible to extend the person's life as long as possible, so I'm b'sheva al taisa. I'm not doing something. I'm not doing anything active, right? And he adds in again in the brackets, b'malkom shalizei yol yideze yitavsu lo yisurim. If he'll continue living, he'll be in more suffering, okay? I don't think this is aser. To be sheva al taisa, to just sit there and do nothing, is not aser, because I'm not being blamed for ending his life. And he says, v'adarabo, and the opposite, maybe we shouldn't do so. I am the Beis Lachem Yehuda, b'yordei Hashem mikach she'omrim. The Beis Lachem Yehuda is on, in the classic Shulchan Aruch, in mine at least, it's Beis Lachem Yehuda with a hey, but Beis Lachem Yehuda, it's a Yiddish spelling. It's on the side of the big Shulchan Aruch. He writes, She'ein, so let's say the guy's lying there. So, She'ein latein melech laharicha gesisa. Meaning, if you thought you have to do everything all the time to save someone no matter what, so not only should you not be allowed, not only should this Raman not say, don't remove the salt, he's like, put salt on his tongue. What are you doing? Go find salt, put it on his tongue. Keep him alive as long as possible. The Rama saying you're allowed to remove the salt. So the Beis Lachem Yehuda just points out, okay, clearly don't put on salt. We'll like go say Shani. Maybe we're dealing with the ghost, is different. Aval l'chora, kol she'enu al ha'isha v'ego hatzala mamish, dami l'nidon ha'goses, sh'arei ha'goses v'kechai l'chol dvarav, v'chol zeh tzarech yin gadol. He says, if we're talking about chayesha, we're talking about chayesha, someone who is not going to reach chaye olam, v'enbo hatzala mamish, and he's not going to save him Hatzala mamish. He's not saying there is chayisha, but there's not hatzala mamish. He's not gonna recover and live a long life. Dami l'nidon agosis is similar to agosis, meaning the step was just pointing at that which we saw in the Rama. Sometimes it's clearly allowed to stop things. If you're clearly allowed to stop things, it must be that you don't always have to do everything. Because he doesn't say this part, but this is what his implication. If you always had to do everything, forget stopping the wood chopper. Hire more wood choppers. What are you doing? Why are you stopping the wood? Why are you even having a discussion? We should pay people to start chopping wood. We should pay people to start chopping wood. We shouldn't stop them. Now, how do we deal? So, okay. The Rama is telling us that some things are okay to stop and some things we're not allowed to do. Dvarim shebegufo, and this is what the disciple was pointing out. Masa begufo, based on shach and taz, you can't touch the body. So what does that mean? Okay. What does that mean? What are we going to do? Practically speaking, nowadays, what does that mean? There are no wood choppers that were, you know, everything we do is going to be connected to the patient's body. So at the very least, there will be situations. Now, when these situations apply are going to be very difficult to figure out, right? Who does this apply to? We haven't decided yet. But once we figure out who it applies to, there are going to be things that the stipler is saying, b'sheva al tasa, you're allowed to do. But you can't touch. Meaning, so if there's a medicine that's given via IV, right? And so there's a bag. And so the tube comes from the big bag at the top of the pole. and the medicine comes through the tube and goes into my arm, the Ghosis's arm, let's make it, you know, Plony Almoni, who's 120 years old. So to not replace the IV bag is Shev Althasa, right? That's going to be Shev Althasa. I don't necessarily, that's going to be passive. I didn't actively do anything. It sounds like under some circumstances that's going to be okay. Fine. We still don't know what kind of person we're talking about. But what about stopping a ventilator? What about stopping a ventilator? So now, stopping a ventilator is karuch in a number of different issues, which we'll talk about in a moment. But stopping a ventilator, it's, well, the button that I have to push isn't actually connected to the chola. So I'm going to stop the sharing the screen so I can see everybody. The button that I have to push is not actively, is not on the chola, right? There's nothing, I mean, the machine's over there. But the tube's connected to him. The tube's in his lungs. So does that count as moving the chola? What does that count as? Is that hasaras hamoneya? Meaning, the Rama said there are going to be a couple of, again, we don't know who we're talking about yet. We have to figure out who we're talking about. There's going to be a machlokes haposkim also. But the Rama said you're not allowed to do something active. It has to be b'shev v'altaseh, passive. So, okay, not refilling the IV bag, that's passive. Pushing the button on the ventilator does not seem very passive to me. It seems you did. I did something. I pushed the button. But mitzad sheni, all that happened was it didn't deliver the next breath. Okay. Well, what about in an older system? So nowadays, if you've been to a hospital, you've seen ventilators connected to the wall. What's in the wall? Well, there's an oxygen supply in the wall, right? Instead of having an oxygen tank next to each patient, this is oxygen flows through the wall, through the pipe. So you can plug into the pipe. It makes it a lot easier than having a supply next to each patient. But what if you had an older system where, no, they're oxygen tanks. Every ventilator had an oxygen tank. And when it emptied, you replaced it. So now what? Is that Shev Althasa? Maybe not replacing it, again, depending on who we're talking about, that's going to be Shev Althasa. I'm just not doing something. Maybe that's going to be acceptable under some circumstances. Nowadays, we're going to have a big problem because it's connected to the wall. So to avoid the wall problem, again, leave aside who we're talking about. We'll save that for probably for next week because I want to discuss this particular issue, which is fascinating. So let's assume that turning off a ventilator is not going to be Shev Althasa. You need to do something. You push the button. You push the button. Don't tell me that's Shev Althasa. I did it. It's an action. You're right. It just prevented the next thing. I can twist my thumbs into a pretzel to explain why the next breath didn't come, but I did X, and then the air stopped flowing. So I did X. It's hard to say it's not active. The question is, could we come up with a means to turn that into Shev Althasa? And so they did. They came up with this very ingenious idea in Eretz Yisrael. Dr. Avram Steinberg presented it at first to Tzitz Eliezer, and then in Israel, the law on these things is presented by Adat Steinberg. He was the head of the committee that came up with this. I think the law is even named for him. And he said, what if we can turn a ventilator into turning off a ventilator into a Shev Althasa? How are you going to do it? So there's a lot of technology involved, but put it on a Shabbos clock. Clearly not a Shabbos clock, you know, or one of these like smart switches, but put it on the Shabbos clock, put on the ventilator. It'll go off in a week. It'll go off in a week. You put on a 7-day timer. In a week from now, next Tuesday, 4:16 p.m., it'll go off. Okay. Fine. And next Tuesday at 4:16 p.m., I'll have a choice to turn it back on or save Altaisa. I could sit back and do nothing. And then I've turned the ventilator into Shev Althasa. Now, the reason that this is important is because, so you'll tell me, Rabbi, what do you do? Just don't put him on the ventilator to begin with. Just Shev Althasa the first time. If the guy doesn't want to be on the ventilator, so don't put him on the ventilator and then Shev Althasa the whole thing. What are you doing? Put him on and then take him off. Just don't put him on. The problem is that we don't want that. We absolutely don't want that. Because often, I'm not getting into numbers, they're irrelevant. Often there are patients that we don't know how they're going to do. We don't know how they're going to do. We don't know how well they're going to recover. We don't know how well they're going to do. They come into the emergency room short of breath. You don't want to have starting discussions with them. Well, look, your long-term prospects are like this and this. There's no time for that. The guy is crashing now. What do I do right now? Now he needs to be on the ventilator because otherwise there's not going to be time to have any conversation. So we want to encourage putting people on the ventilator if they need it without having to think about that. Now, if the person signed it, a different story. But if a person comes in and they need help, we want to treat them right now. So we don't want to start having the cheshbon, all these crazy things. So they said, okay, so put him on the ventilator on a timer. Everyone gets on the ventilator on a timer because the timer doesn't take any more. There's no conversation that has to happen. There's no chachma here. It's the same thing. We all know you turn on the light, it's on the Shabbos clock, same thing, right? Put on a 7-day timer, a 2-week timer, a 30-day timer. It doesn't matter how long. And now, in a week from now, next Tuesday, we're already 2 minutes later. So we have to be faster. At 2 minutes, you're at 4:16 p.m. next Tuesday. We can now make a decision. The timer went off. I didn't do anything. Now I can be b'shev al taisa because now I had a week to make that discussion or to see how the patient progressed. Or I could add another week. Or I could add another week or another month or another. It depends on, this was written a long time ago. But now you can, you know, on your phone, you can adjust the timer and whatever you want. And because this is complicated machinery, there's going to be a redundancy and then make sure and safety measures put in and all sorts of alarms and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not mitigating any of that, but fine. We'll let the engineers engineer it in a safe way. Good. Baruch Hashem. But does that turn it into a shev al taisa as opposed to a kum vaaseh? It's very clever. Now, whether you like it or not, it's very, very clever. It turns something which otherwise was active into something that could be passive. And he asked the Tzitzel, I saw this first, asking the Tzitzel Eliezer. We haven't talked about the Tzitzel Eliezer, but Tzitzel Eliezer, the Eliezer of Waldenberg, says, this is a wonderful idea. Now, if you know anything about the Tzitzel Eliezer is famous for saying, yes, I saw that Stipler, you don't have to do everything all the time for anybody, but no, you do. The Tzitzel Eliezer thinks you've got to do everything effectively, everything, all the time, no matter what, unless he has no more chiyus. Meaning, if he's not breathing and his heart's not beating, you can stop. So Dr. Steinberg, who asked him the question, goes, I don't understand. If he's not breathing and his heart's not beating, so he's dead. So of course you can stop. So what are you telling me? He says, yeah, no, that's it. You have to read the next tshuva, and the next chelek. They had a conversation, they knew each other. In the next tshuva, he says, but he's dead. He says, that's why you can stop. Okay, so he goes, so I don't know what the Ramah, it's a back and forth, he goes, so I don't understand what the Ramah is saying. Tzitzel says, yeah, the Ramah is saying that you're not allowed to stop unless he's dead. So he says the same thing with the timer. If when the timer goes off, Taka, he's not breathing and his heart's not beating, you don't have to restart it. And Dr. Steinberg says, yeah, it's not going to work. And you can't, if his heart's not beating, what are you putting on the ventilator for? He says, okay. He goes, you're the doctor, not me. I don't know why you're doing this. But if his heart's beating, put it back on. So it's ironic that the Tzitzel Eliezer, who's the most enthusiastic of adopting this timer idea, because of the cleverness of Shev Al Taseh versus Kum Vaaseh, he's the one, for him, it's never relevant. It's never relevant. So I think it's somewhat disingenuous to quote the Tzitzel Eliezer. It's in Chelek Yud Gimel Simen Pei Tes, for all those who are interested. And then it goes to Chelek Yud Dalet, and then Chelek Tesvav. They go back and forth, because Dr. Steinberg isn't really sure. He's like, what? You can almost like hear him like trying to figure out what's happening. Well, maybe we'll see it inside next time because I think it's fascinating. But whether we agree, we don't agree, it definitely turns it into something that's much more fascinating from a kum vaaseh into a shev al taiseh, and therefore is maybe fit in the gamut of this Ramah. Okay, Bezos, then we'll stop here and then we'll start with the Tzitzel Eliezer next time. If you want to see it in advance, again, it's Chelek Yud Gimel, Simen Pei Tes. Let's stop the recording.
Thank you very much.